Welcome to Bell Folks Stuff, an experimental podcast where I talk to interesting folks about really important stuff that they enjoy doing. Let's get started. Hey, folks. Tonight, we're going to do a little bit of an experiment. I kind of have a brand new idea for a podcast, and this is the first episode. The idea is that I get some of the awesome people from our community and the game industry in general and sit down and talk to them in a conversational style. And tonight, the amazing Syl from the MMO Gypsy blog and BattleBards podcast, among other things, has been willing to be a trial candidate for this process. So tonight I'm joined by Syl. How are you doing, Syl?
Hey, Bell. I'm great. How are you doing?
I am doing good. And I say tonight, and that's totally a lie, because it is a tonight for Syl, but it is very much, you know, noon for me.
Yeah, that was a bit of a hassle, wasn't it?
Yeah, like, I never really realized that the time difference was that extreme until we actually sat down to try and schedule this, because I think we've been trying to do this for 2 weeks, haven't we?
Yeah. Yeah, I always feel sorry, you know, when people invite me to their podcast and they're, like, America-based, and then I'm being really, really difficult.
Well, like, okay, so a lot of the people that I want to talk to are European, so I'm going to go through this constantly, and the noon on Sunday thing may be, like, as good a time as possible for that.
Yeah, in the end it always works out somehow, but...
Yep. Okay, so first question, because I have to know, I really can't remember. Yeah, you're telling me that you're a little bit nervous about this. Like,
you're like, what are we going to talk about? What is this? What's going to happen?
I'm just not a planny type person. Like, I don't even write an outline out. I just kind of go.
Yeah, well, and when you told me that, you know, it's more about me that I got kind of worried because this is usually really boring for everyone else. So.
No, you're interesting. I know you're interesting.
I'll be your guinea pig, Belle.
Okay, awesome. So I really, like, the funny thing about the internet is you meet people, but you can't really remember, like, which sequence of events happened first. Like, I don't know if I followed you on Twitter first or if I followed your blog first.
I think, but I know.
You think you know?
From my site, yeah. I definitely followed your blog first.
Okay.
Just because I wasn't on Twitter for, like, a really long time, because I was always sort of telling people how awful Twitter was.
and then we, yeah. you know, stole you to our tribe.
Exactly. Like, at some point, I'm not sure why, like, halfway into my blogging career, I thought, let's give Twitter a go. And then I felt really sort of rectified, I guess, because Twitter is kind of awesome for that kind of stuff. And yeah, I was wrong. I'm happy to admit that.
Well, it's weird because, like, I am only on Twitter because I have a blog. Like, I thankfully my name is unusual enough that I could go get my handle without having to try much. But, you know, back when I was doing a lot of, like, my blog started off as, like, a WoW blog. And
exactly.
And so that community was big into Twitter, so I felt like I needed to be on Twitter so that I could communicate with other bloggers.
Maybe that's why, though, because I was never, like, a dedicated Warcraft blog, right?
Yeah.
In the beginning, my blog was called Raging Monkeys.
And I still have it in my news feed as Raging Monkeys.
Yeah, there you go. So there was a lot of World of Warcraft, but not exclusively. And I guess that I was always more in sort of a community that was very focused on game design from the very beginning, sort of meta almost, like theories and stuff like that. And then, yes, Warcraft, but also other MMOs. So it was always a very mixed sort of neighborhood from the very beginning for me.
Well, and I feel like that space has always been kind of fragmented. Like, there were little groups of people that knew each other, and they, you know, talked back and forth, but there wasn't quite the tight-knit community that, like, an individual game-based community had.
No, it was never Yeah, it was very different from, I think, the World of Warcraft community at least, because the WoW bloggers always had this sort of club in a way, and they had this, these heated debates and drama and everything. And if you weren't part of that, you were sort of on the fringes sometime. But there are still very cool people on the fringes, so that's why I'm still here.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think that's why I've been so big into the whole community thing, is I was trying to replicate the same kind of feel I had when I was a WoW blogger in amongst, the rest of us that aren't necessarily WoW bloggers anymore.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
I gotta know, where did the name Syl come from?
The name Syl. Well, Syl is short for Sylvara, right? And I think it's been my online handle from the very beginning. Like, I think the first MMO, definitely Final Fantasy XI, I was already called Sylvara there. So at some point, I must have come up with it, and it's taken from the Dragonlance novels, if you are familiar with them.
I am only passingly familiar with them. Like
Shame
I've
on
read
you,
one or
pal.
two, but I don't like I wasn't all into the D&D novels back in the day.
I was a really big fan of just like the main series, the Chronicles and the Legends of the Dragonlance are some of my favorite books ever. So yeah, and Sylvara is a character in the Chronicles, and I took it from there. And I changed it a little bit because I thought a Y looks better than an I. So of course now I have this problem in BattleBards that Sif is called SYP and I'm called SYL, but hey, there you go.
And poor GC is left out in the cold, and she doesn't have an SY name.
But she has an S name because she's Steph,
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
So, yeah.
So yeah, the Dragonlance thing, I know I had heard from you before, because like in Landmark, your the property you built was based out of Dragonlance, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, that's right. You've been very resourceful here. You remember that?
I have a memory for weird things. Like it's my problem is like if it is really important and I should remember it, like, paying the bills, I don't remember it. But if it's a random bit of trivia, then I totally remember it forever.
Yeah, I did build the Inn of the Last Home in Landmark in the beta. And I tweeted about it, and yeah, it was around for a while. It was
It
so
was
much fun
awesome.
too. Yeah.
It was really awesome. Like I was so impressed with what you did with that
Aww.
house.
And you know what? Right now, with all the new tools, it looks so shabby, and it's so lame now, my house.
Well, like
But
I
back then,
thought
it was
my
very
house
cool.
looked cool too at the time, and now as I still follow most of the Twitter folks from Landmark, and my God, some of the things that are coming out of that game are just insane, and like it totally demotivates me to try and build anything.
I think so too, because right now, if I went back, I could not use that blueprint anymore that I have of the house, just
Right.
because it looks so bad now with all the new tools. I would have to redo the whole thing, and I would have to learn everything again.
Well, and I
I
think the
don't want to
learning
do
curve
that.
is so high at this point because these people that have been coming up with these techniques have never stopped playing the game. They've just
Definitely.
kept developing them over and over.
There are so many tutorials on YouTube, and at the time when I built the inn, I had to learn how to make an arch, and I was on YouTube for hours just learning kind of basics. So I don't want to know how it is right now.
So the longer I think about this, I think I did follow your blog first because of the name Raging Monkeys, because I love monkeys, and that was like an immediate in for me with that blog. How did you come up with that name? Like, considering the content on your blog, it doesn't exactly seem obvious.
No, and it's
You're
kind of
not
why
really a
later on I
ranty
changed it.
person.
In the very beginning, Raging Monkeys was like a multi-author blog, right?
Okay.
So I had this idea after Wrath of the Lich King. Some of my guildmates and me, we stopped playing Warcraft. And at the time, I was reading a lot of blogs. Like I was reading, Larissa's blog and Sphinx's blog and some other blogs. And I wanted to have an opportunity to write more at the time because I was leaving Warcraft, and I thought it would be cool to have a blog that also allows me to stay in touch with some of my guildmates. And then we just kind of discussed this, and we came up with this name somehow. I think part of it is because our very first guild in Warcraft was called Raging Fire. And then later on, when we created our own guild in Warcraft, the one that I've been raiding with for so long, that was called Adrenaline. And we were always sad that we actually didn't go for the guild name Monkeys. So we thought, now that there's this blog, let's take raiding from our first guild and take monkeys, which we never got to have. And that's how Raging Monkeys kind of came to be.
Cool. So,
Yeah, long
like
story.
a few years ago, you turned around and rebranded your guild to MMO Gypsy. And I can remember, like, one of the most distinguished things I can remember about you on Twitter was the really awesome Final Fantasy style little gypsy avatar that you use. So how did the whole rebranding come about? And I mean, have you always used the gypsy thing?
No, I didn't. I wanted to change the blog for a while just because I wasn't so happy with Blogger anymore as a service.
Yeah.
So I was always looking at WordPress blogs. Like, you have WordPress, right?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Yeah. So I
And
was
have
always
like pretty
jealous
much
of.
since the beginning. But I had a Blogger blog early on and decided, yeah, I wanted more than what I could do here. So that's why I went to WordPress as well.
Exactly. And I was always jealous of all the WordPress blogs that had these awesome like comment sections, etc. And then when, this multi-author thing didn't really make me happy. I think a lot of bloggers are going to make that experience that it doesn't necessarily always work out because maybe one person is just going to write more than everyone else, or everyone's kind of slowly dying away and you're left, or whatever happens. Usually, I think it doesn't necessarily work out most of the time.
Most of
So,
the multi-blogs that I've seen always end up like as one person's blog after a point. Like
exactly.
there's one that I can't think of the name of right now, but like only one person posts on it ever.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there are a couple of examples where it really works out. I think Killed in a Smiling Accident, for instance.
Yeah.
So they kind of work it out, I think, or have for a long time. But it never really worked out for me. And I was kind of unhappy about Raging Monkeys. Like you said, it didn't really feel like me. And it
Yeah.
was like this plural name when it was really just me. So I thought, you know what, if I ever change to WordPress, I'm gonna have a new name for myself that is kind of more about me. And I'm a big explorer in games, and I'm sort of a traveler in real life as well. And that's how the name kind of came to me.
I think it's very fitting. Like, I mean, having read your blog since it was Raging Monkeys, it feels more you to me. Like that I can say that, MMO Gypsy definitely, feels like you as a person, or at least what I know of you as a person.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
So that worked out.
Okay,
Yeah.
so since you're, more or less a game blogger, I'm curious, what is your earliest gaming memory?
I think my earliest gaming memories are from, on the Intellivision console in the early 80s, just because that was the very first time that I got in touch with video games.
Yeah. I
So,
never had an Intellivision, but I had an Atari 2600, so
Lucky you.
yeah. Which is kind
Lucky.
of sad 'cause like the Intellivision was so much more advanced than the Atari 2600, but it just didn't have the marketing behind it, and it had those weird little decal things that you had to put on the controller. I remember that much.
Yeah, I mean, in retrospective, I think it was, all of that was horrible, obviously, and the games were kind of horrible. But and I kind of don't remember a single game specifically. I just know that I was playing on it because I was just very, very young. And the first console really that I can remember more vividly is the Atari. We got an Atari ST after that, and that was right before we got the NES. So yeah, I think my first games that I really remember from the gameplay point of view were on Atari. Like Mousetrap was like my favorite first game.
Mousetrap was a great game. Like I can remember playing that on
Really?
I don't think it was on the Atari, but on something else, because like it was out on a lot of platforms. And
you actually played that?
Yeah, it was a great game. Like it was a Milton Bradley game. Like I think it was intended to be loosely based on Mousetrap, the board game, which has always been the weirdest Rube Goldberg experience for you to play. Like, have you ever played the board game?
Is that the one where you have these different things on the board that are supposed to kill the mouse?
Yeah. Basically, it's got like a boot that kicks a thing and it lowers a bucket.
Yeah, and there's like a net that comes down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have played that.
Like, I can remember, the only thing I remember about that game is it like took 20 minutes to set up the board.
Yeah.
And then the game itself was nowhere near as fun as you would think.
I think we actually owned that game at some point, the board game.
Yeah, but like,
I think we lost some of the parts and then it didn't work anymore.
Yeah, because it had so many freaking parts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Oh, but you're like the first person I meet that knows about Mousetrap.
Well, I'm old, so, you know.
Okay. That makes me old too, Belle.
No, you're not. You're surely not old.
Thank you very much. Okay, moving on.
Okay. I think you're actually younger than me, but anyway, for what it's
worth. Am I? How old are you?
I am a little over 38.
Well, I'm nowhere older than you. I am still 32 right now.
See, I thought you were younger than me.
Mm, there we go. Okay. Yeah. I'm turning 33 in 2 months.
But we're at least from the same generation. Like, that's the thing. Like, yeah, Ray on the AgriChat podcast, like, we work together. And I am constantly reminded of the fact that there is exactly a decade between us. Because I will make a reference and she totally does not get it. And I feel so old.
Well, as a blogger, I always felt really privileged in a sense that I was there for when gaming really became a thing. You know, like
yeah.
I was there in the early 80s. And I always felt that was a really big advantage for blogging about games.
Well, and it's not just the gaming portion. We were also there for the birth of the internet. I mean, because like, I can remember various dial-up services, and I can remember bulletin board systems, and things that just don't exist, or people only talk about them in terms of, like, fables.
Exactly, yeah. Horrible dial-up modems. Tell me about it.
Oh, man. There was seriously a time at which I could mimic the sound of, like, a 14.4 modem, or a 28.8 modem.
You have to do that now, Bell.
I can't do it anymore. Like, but there was a time where I could like, because I worked at an ISP in college, and in the back room where the servers were, like anytime someone would dial in, you could hear the modem handshaking with it, and I could tell what speed they were connecting with based on how it sounded.
Wow.
I'm old and I'm a geek, so yeah. So when did you get into computer gaming?
You mean on the PC?
On the PC, yeah, like not console, but
yeah, because I did start out to be quite the console kid, and it changed pretty much with MMOs.
Because, okay.
Well, yeah, the internet, and then there was Ultima Online, right? That was like the first MMO that I sort of got to watch a lot of the time. And then I got my own computer and my own modem, and I really, really wanted to play Final Fantasy XI. And that's kind of how it started.
And Final Fantasy XI was a weird time in MMOs, because I was playing EverQuest at the time, and a bunch of my friends quit EverQuest to play Final Fantasy XI. And I never actually joined them, but man, I came close.
It was really, I mean, it looked great. You know, after a generation of sort of bad-looking MMOs, Final Fantasy looked amazing, and it was very sort of familiar for franchise fans, obviously, like myself. But it was, man, it was harsh, because it was very Asian and grindy and harsh.
But the thing is, it was no worse than EverQuest. And I guess that's the main reason why I didn't particularly get into it, was because I was looking for a game that required less time commitment than EverQuest did.
Yeah, I can't.
And that was definitely not that game.
No.
I've always wanted to play it, though.
Why did you want to play it?
Because it had, like, some really interesting ideas behind it. Like, Some of the jobs that they put into that game, I keep hoping that someday will make their way into Final Fantasy XIV, like the Puppet Master, for example. That just seemed like an interesting idea.
Yeah, with the automaton mob, right? Yeah, they are awesome. But they were added very late. That was way after my time. They have so many classes, and the job system is, I think Final Fantasy has one of the coolest job or class systems ever.
Oh, totally. And the fact that, that's the thing that always hooked me about 14, was the fact that I could do everything on one character.
Yeah, that is so me, because, you know, maybe you know I don't do alts.
Yeah.
So I love having the option to kind of go places with that one character that I have.
Well, like, I have always played a lot of different characters just because I want to experience everything I can. But I always feel regret because that means some of my characters don't have the cool things that other characters do. So I like the job system in that aspect. So what is your what did you play in Final Fantasy XI?
I have the most awesome combo. I have a red mage slash bard. And I still am sort of longing for those classes. And the bard especially was so amazing in Final Fantasy XI.
So what was the bard like in XI? I mean, obviously, it's mostly just a DPS in 14.
That's what I don't like. You know, I've played bards in different games, and like in Alutz, for instance, and I think in Rift I had a look as well. And they're just DPS classes, and usually there are rogue classes or thieves for some reason. And I totally don't dig that. And in Final Fantasy XI, the bard was a pure buffer, CC class, purely about buffing the party and also applying debuffs to the enemies. And it was so interesting because they would play little tunes all the time for different effects. And they would have to run around all the time to switch between melee and ranged camps. And they would sing different tunes for range, different tunes for melee, and then different tunes for debuffs. And they were constantly switching around and being everywhere and making the party stronger. And that was just amazing.
It sounds a lot like the bard was in EverQuest. Because like the really, really talented bards could keep up like five songs at a time. Because there was like a period where the buff lasted longer than the song. So like you could turn off the song and the buff would still last. And people could, they called it song twisting. So did they do that in 11 as well?
I'm honestly not sure anymore. Because I played it for like half a year. And because it was so hard, you know, to level up on your own, like, there was like zero soloing after level 15 or something. So, and the bard was a special class because it was a hero class that you could only unlock after you were level 30 on another class. So I got my bard really, really late, and I never really got to play her in like a party environment. So I don't remember that, how it really worked.
Have you ever checked out the bards from EverQuest 2?
I did try to play EverQuest 2, and I couldn't.
It's just too far gone. Like, no, a lot of people cannot stand the look of EverQuest 2.
Yeah, that was precisely the issue, Bill.
Yeah, like, it's... At this point, it looks so dated. And, like, I was always a big fan of the world. The world was cool, but, man, those models...
I know a lot of people really liked it, and then they are still playing it now. So there must be something to it. But when I went to check it out, I thought it was horrible. Like the character models, they put me off so much.
Well, if you ever want to give it another shot, I will totally re-up my EQ too, and we'll hang out and play. Because it's one of those games that I always cycle back to, just because it has a lot of really intricate systems.
The housing is really great, isn't it?
Oh, the housing is amazing. And there's so many different options. Now, unfortunately, like a lot of the really cool houses you can get are on the cash shop. But yeah, like just doing quests out in the world or killing, you know, mobs gives you stuff to put in your house. And that's kind of the aspect that I found missing in a lot of the housing implementations is, like, for me, housing was always this trophy room, basically. Like, here's all these things I did, You know, I can remember when I got this item from this place, or I got this item from this place. So it's this whole way of reinforcing nostalgia.
And it works. That's how you got Tro.
Yeah.
You just have slots and you can allocate trophies. But that's, I don't know, long term, I think that gets too boring for me personally. I want to have more design freedom.
Have you ever played with the Rift housing system? Because, like, that is really wide open.
Yeah, I've, I left Rift before that was added again. But I had a look at a couple of, what are they called again? Not spheres.
Dimensions.
Dimensions, exactly, with the bartender and everything.
Yep.
But I do think that Wildstar is kind of similar, and I have this huge house and lots of stuff in Wildstar at the moment, so...
My favorite thing about Wildstar, honestly, were, like, the little mini-games you could put in your house.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I did the brewing mini-game, like the Moonshiner Shack.
The Moonshiner,
Every time I went near the house... the problem was, is I got to a point where, like, I was enjoying messing with my house far more than I was enjoying the rest of the game.
Everyone goes through that stage.
Like, we jokingly referred to it as unlocking Animal Crossing mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's even a Penny Arcade strip about that.
Yeah.
Like at level 14, everyone disappears from, you know, doing anything in Wildstar other than hanging on their sky plot, sky map. It is really fun. I did so much with my house. Like, I have an amazing house now and a veranda and lots of other little things. And the games are fun too, like you said, but after a while, you sort of remove them because there's nothing left to get from them. And you can't decorate that part of the map. So that gets annoying after a while.
Yeah. So I know you're playing Wildstar, so many aren't. What has been the thing that's kept you in that game?
Honestly, I don't know. I want to say dresses, but that probably wouldn't be true. No, I think Wildstar, partly because I never expected to play it and like it. So I had, like, very low expectations. I was sort of hoping that Elder Scrolls Online was going to be my game this year. And then that happened.
Yeah. Although, like, I plan on going back when they put in the new veteran system.
Do you?
Well, to be truthful, I never canceled my account. I still have it active. But the problem I ran into was just the veteran system was so outrageously grindy. And I felt like I wasn't getting anywhere. Cause like I was still only veteran rank one. I was like, I played through like the first entire zone of the second faction. And it just felt like every time I was doing anything, it wasn't really making any progress towards the goal of the next veteran rank.
Yeah.
And there's 10 veteran ranks.
Tedious. Yeah. That sounds horrible. Like horrible work in front of you.
Yeah. Like I feel like my aptitude for grinding is better than a lot of players, but there's just a point where it gets to be it's too grindy for me.
Yeah, so I think what Wildstar probably really had on Elder Scrolls at launch was they had so much polish. Like, they released such a complete game already at launch. They had a great launch. They had everything going, the PvE, the raiding, the questing, the dungeons, the PvP. Everything was already there in Wildstar, and it was working fairly well. This game has really come with a lot of polish from the get-go. And that's something that I really appreciate personally. And it has a lot of fun stuff. It has awesome maps. It has wonderful, wonderful music that we are going to feature soon again on BattleBards, just because there is so much to love.
Yeah.
The dungeons are hard. The combat is different. So those were kind of things that were appealing. The housing is fun. At the same time, endgame has a big problem, even though I am actually attuned to raiding now. Who would have thought?
Oh, wow. You went through that whole long process?
Yeah. I have been writing.
I salute you.
On my blog, and then I went and I did it. I don't know
That's funny.
What that makes me, but yeah. I have been raiding, too, in the past couple of weeks, and it's, you know, it is different.
So I would guess you're in an active guild over there.
Yeah, the thing is, you know, I went for the European RP server just because of the community. I don't RP personally, but I thought there were going to be better guilds. And then I also joined Dominion side. So it's like the niche inside the niche, and my server is really, before the mergers this week, it was really, really dead. There were just these two raid guilds or guilds, RP guilds, and I wasn't one of them that really wanted to raid as well. So and that's kind of how I got to do the attunement. I didn't plan to do it at all, but it just happened because of the community, and you can't do it without a guild. There was just no chance.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that ultimately killed the game for me was that, I rolled on Avendra, an RP server for the US
The
side,
US.
but I rolled on the wrong faction. Like, it seemed like everyone from the US and from Twitter and anything rolled on Exile Avendra, and I rolled
Same.
Dominion Avendra, and it was just dead. Like, there was nobody to do anything with. Like, I would roam around the zones, and it could be a while before I actually saw anyone in a leveling zone.
It is exactly the same for me.
So I guess that sapped a lot of my enjoyment, 'cause like I'm big on leveling through dungeons, and when we didn't have enough people to run dungeons, period, I don't know. I kind of lost interest after a while.
Would you go back now that they merged all the servers?
I might. I don't know. Like I don't necessarily have hard feelings towards the game. Like, the only game that I have ever played that I have a negative taste in my mouth is Guild Wars 2.
Guild
But
Wars 2.
yeah, I'm not a
Why?
fan of Guild Wars 2. I
How come?
don't know. Like, I'm just not a fan of their group content. Like, I feel like their design for group content is not a design that I would want.
You mean like the sort of free-for-all
I
mass
hated
merge
their
and stuff?
dungeons. Yeah, I hated
Okay.
their dungeons. I hated the big world events, because as melee, I was constantly dead as the ranged ran around and kited. I just felt like it was not my kind of game. I'm not a big fan of the whole no real roles to be played. Like I'm not necessarily chained to the Holy Trinity. But I feel like if you're going to replace the or get rid of the Holy Trinity, you have to replace it with something. That you
Which
can't
is
just take it
hard.
away and hope it, works out in the end.
I do think that it takes a lot of adjusting in Guild Wars 2 for sure. And I think that, in the very beginning when people were talking about not having roles in this game, maybe it was misunderstood to some extent as well, because you still kind of have to play strategically. You still have classes that can do more support, and you still have sort of tankier or more controlling classes, and you still kind of have to work together that way. And a lot of people just didn't. They would just rush in and play a DPS and be very self-centered. And I think that's a huge problem in the dungeons because they're pretty hard. And I've done my share of aura runs and got all the gear, etc. And I made some horrible experiences from that point of view.
Well, in like the successful dungeon runs I ran, we were successful because we basically glitched out the mobs, or we terrain hacked, or we did some other exploit to get around the mechanics. And yeah, that's just not fun to me.
No, that's no fun. But that's a kind of you do have that in Wildstar too. In a couple of the veteran dungeons, people will just use any cheat they can find, just because some of the bosses are so hard. It's
Yeah.
kind of sad, you know? So
And I've always felt
eventually.
like if you had to glitch it out, then you really didn't beat the encounter.
No. It was just smart enough to read up on glitches on the forums.
Yeah, 'cause like all it takes is one patch to do away with your ability to run something.
I'm always surprised that there are such bugs to begin with. I mean, in some of the dungeons in Wildstar, you really have to ask yourself, how could they not patch this yet?
Well, or how did the first person figure out they could do this? Like, because some of those glitches are just really obscure. Like, somebody had to accidentally fall into this and then tell everyone else.
Yeah, I have no idea how people come up with this stuff.
But the other thing with Guild Wars 2 was that I just didn't feel connected to the world. Like, I think the whole not quest, but kind of quest thing, I just. And I think once the living story kicked in, had I still been around, I would have enjoyed playing through that, but like I'd already quit the game at that point. So I feel like maybe the Living Story came through and fixed a lot of those problems, but I just didn't feel connected to what I was doing. I was just running around and doing things, and I think it was like the ideal game for somebody who wanted to get in and out quickly.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it still has sort of a more casual, friendly approach. I guess that's what some people appreciate. And
yeah,
a lot of people have said that they don't really feel connected with the world. I mean, I have said that too. But at the same time, I really, really like the questing and event system. And I don't necessarily think that that's why I don't feel so connected. Because in Warcraft, we had so many fetch and delivery quests, like just traditional questing, and I never felt connected anyway, because I don't read I hate reading a lot of quest text. It's kind of hard for an MMO to make you care about bigger story arches. I think that's something that is kind of overrated anyway.
Yeah. Well, and they did a lot of stuff really well. Like, there's a lot of things that I wish everyone would do. Like, I loved the fact that there was no competition for resources, mm-hmm. you know, or that there, that you could, like, you know, dump stuff in your bank from the field.
Yeah, that's probably interesting, too, for those that have done it. And
yep.
other things, like, you know, you can res anyone. And, I mean, for me, Guild Wars 2 is by far the most beautiful MMO I've ever played. I mean, it's a stunning game. It's the world is amazing. The music is off the charts. So I love this game so much. It's just that kind of long term, I didn't really know what to do with myself in Guild Wars 2. And there's nothing in terms of, you know, the little fun things in Lotro, for instance, like the music or the housing or all these other things that you can do instead of just doing five mans are lacking. They're missing in Guild Wars 2.
Well, and what I find interesting is you just said that game is so pretty, and I agree. Like, the overall package is gorgeous, but what is amazing is how low resolution everything in the world is, yet still looks. You know, it's a triumph of art direction. Because the whole thing looks beautiful together. But if you were to pick apart any element and just look at it by itself, you would think, man, that's all pixelated and it doesn't make sense. But together, it gives this entire painterly approach.
Yeah, and I think they did have, like sort of on the technical side, they did something really unique in the sense that stuff that is further away is actually artwork. And in some shots, you can actually see that there's something going on in terms of what is really in the world and what is background smudge stick artwork.
Yeah.
I want to say. They just created their own aesthetic.
Well, and what's nice about that is it really lowered the bar as to who could run the game. Like, it's another one of those games that pretty much will run on a toaster.
I didn't know that, though. I thought it was more demanding than something like World of Warcraft.
No, I've been able to run it on all kinds of systems. It actually performs really well on, pretty low resource systems.
Mm-hmm. Nah, I think I'm going to go back at some point, just because they've added so much now with, I think, not just Living Story, but other bits. And they introduced this different, gear system now, like the cosmetics and stuff are different. And they finally fixed the auction house. Oh my god.
I think I could go back, but I would have to have a group to go back to.
That's always like the problem, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's always the problem with every game, is like, you kind of wish there was a static group of people who only loved this one game, but in truth, the people that we play with, like, are kind of nomadic, and we flip back and forth between games pretty often. So there's never this group that just stayed behind.
No, I can't rely on my peers anymore because they're just like me. So I'll have to find like a guild, a steady guild of younger players, just the way I have in WildStar, because otherwise it's not going to work out.
Well, and that was the big thing that I, like, the whole Alliance of Awesome Guild thing was a cool idea until I realized in WildStar that we all are 1 to 2 month gamers. Like, and so no wonder, you know, the guild depopulated quickly. You know, because everybody has pretty much the same cycle of when the next big, bright thing on the horizon comes up, we all jettison the current one and go over to that.
But that's the thing, though, Belle. There's not going to be a next thing anymore for a long time. I think we're kind of running out of MMOs to play in the future. I mean, there's EverQuest Next announced, and that's it.
Yeah, and honestly, like, I'm curious to see what your take on the whole Titan thing is. In that, like, for me, I feel like that may be Blizzard trying to distance itself from MMOs in general.
Yeah, well, I have been on the, on the Mother of Peril podcast lately, where we talked
Yeah.
a great deal about Titan, and I do absolutely think that Blizzard don't want to be sort of picked as an MMO company or developer, and it's not really any. There's no point when they already have World of Warcraft.
Right.
I think they figured out, we already have this game. It's still at 7 million or so subscribers. It's still great cash cow. And there is such a financial risk in developing new MMOs on the current market. We can't really compete with our own success. Why should we? What's the point? Why should we make another MMO?
Well,
Why not,
MMOs are definitely on the down cycle too. I mean, WildStar is a perfect example. The number that I had heard for WildStar is that they only sold about 500,000 copies. And there was a time where you could throw any MMO out on the market and they would sell 1 million, 2 million copies. So I think the appetite for MMOs may be waning.
I think so. And there's, more and more free to play as well. There are many different deals. There are buy to play games now and free to play and niche MMOs coming out. And there's just so much, and people are getting fed up. It's not the same market anymore like it was 10 years ago. And I think Blizzard kind of realized that, and they didn't really know what to do with Titan anymore anyway. Like, they had to change design direction halfway through, and that's not a good sign. So I think they were smart in sort of putting it to an end. There's so much else that they can do, and they're kind of conquering different markets with these different like card games and MOBA, etc. So they want to be everywhere, and they should focus on that. I mean, they make great polished games that are casual more so than some of their competitors, and that has worked. That has worked for World of Warcraft too, and that's what they should be doing. So,
Yeah, because really, like, I don't think of them as an MMO company. I think of them as, like, their thing is to take a genre and sand off the rough spots and make it really easy to pick up and learn and then polish it to a mirror shine. And I just don't know what other genres that aren't already super saturated they could break into, like, by
Yeah,
doing that.
I agree. So, I think for the time being, they're probably in a pretty comfortable spot right now. And we'll see if they ever, if they'll ever deliver another breakthrough in the sense like World of Warcraft was, or whether they're just gonna be known for what they have done now.
Yeah. So I'm curious, are you the type of gamer that returns to old games very often? Like, we were just talking about that you would consider going back to Guild Wars 2, but do you have other games that, you think to yourself that, given the chance or given a patch, I would possibly return to that?
In terms of MMOs, I think I have a couple that I'm just sort of, I guess the ones that I really, really lost my heart to and that I am reluctant to uninstall as well. Like, I always keep them on my hard disk are the games that I go back to when I'm really bored. Yeah, I think so. So Guild Wars 2 would be such a game, and Minecraft is such a game too. I kind of have to go back to Minecraft every now and then. And I think Landmark is going to be like that for me. Oh, and Alots used to be a game like that as well. Yeah.
Owlets is an interesting game because, like, there's not a lot of people that I know that play it, but when I've played it, I've really enjoyed it.
I think Alots is kind of, I don't know, unlucky maybe when it came out, and it was always instantly compared to World of Warcraft. And then it was a Russian developer, so a lot of people are kind of, that can't be good or whatever. So,
Well, what
yeah,
I
I
loved
do.
about it was the art direction and the music. I mean, because it's got this weird Russian block steampunk feel to it, and I just love that. Like,
And it has great race, awesome race design.
like Gibberling still will go down in the book as probably the most interesting race choice I've ever seen in an MMO.
Definitely, yeah, and also the Horizon are like my favorite race of all time.
Well, they're undead, but they're like a far cooler undead than any game has ever given us.
Yeah, they're these cyborgs. I think Wildstar is kind of trying to capture some of that with the Mordesh. But the Arisen are far more evil than that, so I like them.
So do you usually tend to cycle towards evil characters over good characters?
Not really, unless they have the better hairstyles. You know, I play the Lions in Warcraft, and most of the time I kind of want to be part of the good guys, even though ironically the Lions weren't really the good guys, but I will go for the baddies if they are just way cooler, like way more badass, and the good side is kind of cheesy with fairies and stuff, then I can't play fairies, so that's probably why in Alots when I saw the fairies I just knew, okay, I cannot be that faction.
Yeah. Well, the other faction allies has just the cooler towns and the cooler landscapes. And I loved leveling through the first city area as whatever the human type is on that side, the Imperial or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what are they called? I don't know. Let's call them Imperial.
Yeah, like it's something like that. I forget what it is off the top of my head, but it has this whole almost Warhammer 40K feel to the world.
Yeah, and the bad faction, they have this sort of Russian-style city. So it's very square, everything very pompous and very sort of sterile in a way. But I still kind of liked, I think it's called Nezibgrad, isn't it?
Yeah. That was the area I spent most of my time in.
Yeah, me too. I did like that. I think the first kind of outdoorsy zones after that, they don't look so great. For that faction, but yeah.
I always wanted to get far enough to get a, like, starship and have the ship-to-ship combat, but I never made it that far.
No, me neither.
Because that always seems so cool.
Yeah. I was mostly just looking at stuff and outs and other players and in the main city and hanging out at the auction house and stuff and just enjoying sort of the music and the atmosphere. I mean, some games, that's kind of enough. Oh, yeah, and Lotro is a game like that, too, by the way. I will always go back to to,
like,
Lotro.
Lotro I have played probably 5 separate times, and I always enjoy it when I'm there, and I never really know why I filter away from it.
I think it's too late now to join Lotro, honestly. I think there is so much that you would have to catch up with and grind your way through, and it's just overwhelming.
I've never made it terribly high in that game, like... I think the highest character I have is in the 30s.
I think mine is like 48, and I just lost my will to put up with the grind before Moria. But
yeah.
The world is just, I mean, Lotro has the most authentic world feeling of any MMO I felt. And I
feel like,
wonderful.
And this is a weird thing, like, Lotro has the best horses.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's never been a game that does horses as well as Lotro. Just the way they move, the way they, you know,
sound,
it's perfect.
Mm-hmm. They sound so real, and that's another thing I've written about in the past. The sound effects in this game are just stunning, and they do so much for that immersion. That is insane. Like, I don't understand why other developers don't get how important sound effects are.
Well, and I think it's because they were basing it off of a really fleshed out and detailed world, but the world has clear landmarks. Like, you can move without looking at the map after a certain point, because the world, it's not a bunch of repeating terrain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing is placed there by accident, and, you know, there's specific areas that only look like that one area. And that's
very true.
And that's one of the things that's always bugged me about other games is so oftentimes it feels like you have cut and paste terrain. Like, oh, this is cave number 3 and it looks just like cave number 1.
Yeah, it's an overkill of random bits and pieces. I mean, Wildstar is like that. I do kind of like the style of Wildstar. You know, this sort of borderlandsy thing that they got going on. But if you look at the map and different zones, they are full. I mean, they are stacked overly full on things. Like, it's just an overkill. You will never find an empty space, except for the few times when you're sort of in areas of a map that you shouldn't actually be, but there is no scale to it. It feels really crammed all the time.
That was one of the things that bugged me in beta, and one of the reasons why I didn't originally think I was going to play the game was it felt like it was just so much visual overload. It felt like I was going down the Vegas Strip or something like that, and there was just things looking at or trying to get my attention at all time.
That's exactly how it is. And it's sort of it's unnerving, you know, it's a different kind of game. It doesn't become this sort of second place where you want to go and live the way you would want in Middle Earth, where you could really see yourself living there, so to speak.
Right.
And that's not the case in Wildstar. Oh yeah, I think empty spaces are not being appreciated enough in games.
So one of the things that I will always remember from, you know, Battle Bards is your term of spooky magical. So
Yay.
can you describe for us what spooky magical means to you?
Spooky magical is just my attempt to sort of define the music that Danny Elfman is known for best.
Yeah.
And it's sort of this really whimsical, sparkly, yet dark, kind of dark fairy tale-esque music that I just love from the bottom of my heart. And that's what I call spooky magical.
Yeah, like, so I know you like the spooky magical thing, but I'm curious, and like, this is one of the things that I think I'm going to ask everyone. What actually scares you? Like, what is the type of thing that would actually scare you in a game? Like, or
In a
in
game.
life in general, one of the two, yeah.
Well, it's kind of funny because I told Lior the other day that I really don't play horror games and I don't watch horror movies at all because I'm a scaredy cat. So I think that, you know, I'm a person that is more on the also with my picks on BattleBards and on the games that I play, I really like beautiful things. I like aesthetically beautiful things, and games for me have to make me feel better about the world, not worse. Otherwise, there is no point to my escapism. So in games, I don't like anything that's ugly and horrible and brutal and just yeah, that's why I don't like horror, and that scares me. Like games like right now, what's it called? The Evil Within or something. I could
Yeah.
never play that. I could never. Not just because it's ugly to look at, but because it's sort of evil in a very, I guess, in a very real scary way, and in a sick way. And that's the kind of stuff that I really, really don't do. So yeah, that scares
Like
me. Like,
would it give you nightmares and such?
it would make me feel bad. Like I would feel like I've polluted my soul or my mind with things that are garbage. So, and that's how I feel about horror movies. I mean, not the funny ones, you know, I get like Scary Movie and that, but Saw or movies like that and that are also about sadism and people just doing horrible things to others. I can't look at that.
Yeah, like I feel like there's a whole genre of horror film that I could do without the whole Saw thing or Hostel or the these people are innocent and you know bad things are going to happen to them, you know, because they went to the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, those get under my skin, but you know, I've always been one that could watch most horror films.
Those that are really sort of bleak in an existential kind of way that just go under your skin because you feel that there's something real about them. I think if a movie is way off the charts, silly horror, and you know it could never be real, and it's not really how people behave, it's not so bad. But when it's something really subtle and sort of psychologically scary, that's very different. And I'm not saying those movies shouldn't exist, you know, maybe there is a reason why some people need to see them or it's good for them, or I don't know, but it's definitely not for me. And I can get really, really upset if someone wants to make me watch something like that, or my partner will, you know, maybe gift me with games that he knows I'm never gonna play. And then I get really upset because I don't do this and I never will, so leave me alone.
Like the for me the horror like genre that I always did enjoy was almost a kind of mythology.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I've always liked vampires and werewolves and that sort of thing, because it's less about, you know, the whole slasher ethic of a film, but more about, like, this dark mythology.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, how do we define horror? I've played Ethan Carter last week, and it's supposed to be a horror game. And I watched The Village, which is supposed to be a horror tale, and I don't agree. That's not horror for me. Or you could even think that the Sherlock Holmes movies have sort of horror in them, the sort of Victorian Gothic kind of horror. But that's not, I mean, that's too pulp for me. That's kind of totally different. I have no problem with that.
Like, one of my favorite horror movies is Nightbreed, which is based on the Clive Barker novel Cabal. And to me, it's not really a horror film. It's more of a dark fairy tale.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So yeah, there's murder and death and things like that in it, but it's this weird dark fairy tale, not you know, the world is coming to get you.
Yeah, I mean, Alfred Hitchcock is another example for kind of a genre like that, right? I mean, if it's the tale and just the tale is about something happening and the kind of sets off all the people in it and the interesting storyline, that's different from a movie that kind of, you know, like a gory movie or something like we said that has all the sadism in it. And I feel they just celebrate the awfulness of these things, and I'm not interested in that. But if it's a small part of a greater picture that puts the entire events, of a story together, then it's different. So,
I think it's mostly the sadism that I would object to. Yeah. So I'm with you in those lines. Okay, so counterpoint. What gives you hope? And what gives you warm fuzzies?
What gives me hope? Oh, that is difficult, Belle. I think it gives me hope whenever I see people being excellent to one another. Like people going out of their way to help someone even if they didn't have to. Or just being social and kind of caring for one another. I think that gives me hope when I can see that. When I see people standing up against injustice, being brave, that gives me hope. And chocolate. Yeah,
but not American chocolate.
No, that would be weird. Knowing where I come from, that would be redundant, I guess.
Yeah,
but you have other great things. I think you guys have the best ice cream by far.
I would agree with you, only because there's like a local chain called Brahms that's amazing. And they're weird because they will only expand their business to within a certain amount of distance from their main farm, so that they want to make sure that like stuff always gets there fresh. So
that sounds good.
But it's a very, like, by nature it's a very limited area that has it, but man, it's good.
Well, I just had, you know, even I guess for you it's the chains like B&J's or Baskin and Robbins and Doe's, and they're excellent already. Like, and you guys come up with these crazy sort of off the charts crazy flavor combinations that no one else would ever do, and they're kind of great, most of them anyway. And
so
we don't get that here. People are
so one of the best things I've had lately is I tend to get shakes instead of just like hard ice cream. Like, I don't know, I've always been a fan of shakes, but there's a place around here that has a bacon shake.
Oh,
it is amazing.
What
it's
is
like
bacon with ice cream.
It's bacon with like soft serve ice cream and maple syrup. And I don't know if you ever eat syrup on like sausage or bacon in the morning. Like, if you have pancakes and sausage or pancakes and bacon or something like that, if you ever eat the syrup on the bacon. But it tastes like that. Like, it's like breakfast rolled into like this awesome little shake. But it sounds weird.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's, yeah. I mean, you never know, right? Maybe I would like it. But yeah, this is the kind of stuff that you would never see here and you could never get here. And that would never happen just because people are so down to earth and yeah, not really having a lot of creativity when it comes to crazy food.
But you live in a truly beautiful place. Like, we're friends on the Nintendo Network, and you would draw me these pictures of these mountains, and I thought you were just, drawing stereotypical scenery for of what you would think we would think your scenery would be. But then you posted a bunch of pictures, and that is literally your front door view. So
Yeah, I
tell
wasn't
me a little bit
lying.
about where you live in the world.
I live close to some very famous mountains in Switzerland that are the Bernese Alps, and it's a very beautiful place and still kind of close to the capital of Switzerland, Bern. So it's because it's a small country, everything's kind of close, and we have a lot of beautiful mountains and just lakes and woods and beautiful nature, if that's your thing, and hiking and just yeah, a lot to see, and we take a lot of trips on the weekend all the time because we think that there's so much beauty around us that we should really go and see it, and there's so much here, so it's kind of nice, because I am a gamer and I also love to hang in virtual worlds, but I really have a very stunning real world scenery around me as well. So I'm kind of trying
Yeah,
to
you
have
have mountains that
both.
would rival any mountains in any game.
Yeah. I do like mountains a lot in games too, and I like snowy maps. And I think that's partly because I'm from here and it looks like home, and also sort of the way the Shire looks and the Lord of the Rings is very similar to where I live right now. So it's kind of my hood in a way.
I find that interesting. Like, I always gravitate towards snowy climates in games, and but I very much don't live in a snowy climate.
Yeah, I don't really live in a snowy climate either because it's very warm here nowadays, and like we have very hot summers and we had a really golden fall so far, and it's not cold and it's hardly snowing lately, like in the past few years. So you really have to go to the mountains, but I can always see the snowy mountains even if it's really hot on my veranda. All the mountains around me are still snowy. So it's kind of you have these extremes next to one another. Yeah. It's interesting. You should come here. I'll show you around, Belle.
I would love to come up there because, yeah, like I would love to go to Europe in general.
And do an interrail.
I feel like though that I would have a lot of people that would want me to stop by because for whatever reason, like I seem to have a lot of European friends, and maybe I just get along better with Europeans than Americans.
I think my blood role is kind of 50-50, and I would definitely, I want to go back to the States sometime. And I would definitely, I think that's one of the nice things about being an international blogger like we are. You have people everywhere that you could probably visit, and that would be fun.
Okay, so I probably should have led off this with this, but meh, this is the whole side effect of not actually planning. One of the things that I think is most interesting is when people describe themselves, like the words you use to choose to describe yourself are almost more telling of you as a person than what your actual actions are. So, like from like a 500-foot view, what or who is Syl?
Oh man, am I supposed to know that?
I don't know. This is the first
Don't
one.
know.
I'm
Well,
like who
that's
I,
kind of
like
difficult.
describe yourself,
Can't really,
for
I can't, I don't, that's the thing. I don't think we are the best judges of ourselves. I don't think that we can really describe ourselves so well. And I actually disagree with you that actions aren't more important. I think actions are way more important than what we might think we are.
Well, but when somebody describes themselves, you're not just getting who they are, you're also kind of getting their aspirations. Because we'll describe ourselves as something that we want to be, not necessarily as who we are.
So do you actually know who you are, or like who you want to be, or what your
Oh, I have
aspirations
no clue at all. Like I will
Why do you
describe
ask me that?
myself, yeah, like no, I mean, it's totally cool not to have an answer. Because all of this is brand new.
It really I think you need to give like a context. Who are you as a gamer, or who are you as a, you know, on the job, or who are you? Because I think we are so many different people.
Like, answer any of those you want.
Well, as a gamer, okay, as a gamer, I'm definitely an explorer that appreciates the beauty of games as a virtual space, and that just loves this kind of international borderless community that we have with so many great people that I just feel are worth knowing so much more than some of the people here in my immediate environment, just because we have things in common, and I want to have a good time with people that have things in common with me. Yeah. So I think that's who I am as a gamer.
So who are you in the real world? I mean, don't mean name, age, anything like that, but like, what is your persona in the real world?
I think that this is kind of interesting, I guess, because we often have this topic, right, in blogging and gaming,
yeah,
that people are someone else online, and I really feel that I am exactly the same person in real life that I am in game and on my blog as well. So, you know, I have the same sense of humor, like the same sense of dark humor, or I have the same sense of wanting to speak out about issues, or I have the same sort of independent thinking, and I'm a direct person. So I'm trying to grow, I guess, when it comes to these things. And I'm really the same online and offline.
Like, I feel like I would like to say I'm the same person in both places. And I don't think there's a lot of a disconnect from, like, reading what I write versus talking to me in person. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that maybe my online persona is, like, an amplified version of who I really am. Mm. Like, maybe it's the person I kind of wish I was more often.
Well, yeah, I think that's certainly true in the sense that often real life doesn't allow us to be who we want to be, you know, and we can't really live to our full potential maybe because we're not given the chance or not the opportunities. And online, we can definitely do that more easily. And I think that's one of the nice things about MMOs, for instance, and people who gravitate, let's say, towards leadership might never have this chance in real life just because they don't have the education for it or the papers or the job offers, but they can still have a goal in MMOs, right? So
yep.
I would say, yeah, it certainly amplifies some of what's already there, but I don't really think that there are so many people around that are different, like putting up an act online. I don't actually believe that of MMO players.
I don't think so either, because, like, it would be really hard to maintain that act 24/7. Like, I feel like even if they enter into it trying to, you know, be someone else, the real person always shows through.
Yeah, and isn't the point of escapism anyway that you want to go somewhere where you can relax and be yourself
yep.
for a while? So I think it's probably more the other way around. Some people are more themselves online than they can be in the real world. And it's sad that they can't. It's, you know, I wish for them that they can do that in real life. But obviously society as a whole can be a very dark and nasty place. So we know why it's like that, right?
Yeah.
And I think maybe the other thing as well is that, you know, a lot of my friends that are MMO players especially are more introverts. And I'm more of an extrovert. Like, my personality profile is very extrovert as well. And that's why I think maybe I'm not that different offline and online. Maybe that has to do with it as well.
Like, I would definitely consider myself introverted.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people would argue with me. But it's being up close and personal with people and outgoing is something I have learned to do as kind of almost a defense mechanism, because that's what the world expects of me. But man, it takes it out of me. Like, I can only do that for so long.
Mm-hmm. And you wanted to switch off for a while.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, we all have to. I think games are great for that. And you know, I've like no remorse, or I feel no regret whatsoever over things like time spent in gaming or escapism being a bad thing, that's far from what I personally believe.
Well, I mean, I think that comes with anything that you love doing. I mean, there shouldn't be any regret over the time spent.
But there's so much of that. Like I'm always surprised how much of that is still around with gamers. There's still this kind of thought in the back of their head that I shouldn't be gaming so much, or it's not productive, or I feel guilty about spending my time this way. There is so much of that still.
Yeah.
So yeah, for me, it's always like gaming has been great in so many ways and enriching, like feeding my real life and vice versa, and meeting great folk in the blogosphere too, and I feel it's been very, very productive for me as a person.
Well, I feel like that I am much more enriched by all the different people that I've met through gaming and through blogging and through podcasting and all the other things that we all do, that I never could have met this many interesting people in real life. Like, I just don't have the circumstances to constantly be meeting new and interesting people with different points of view.
Definitely. And well, with still having, while still having this common denominator in a way, I think that's the other thing. Like, if you're more of, let's say, into geek stuff, or you call yourself a geek or a gamer, it can be a very lonely place depending on where you live. I certainly don't have a lot of people with my interests around me here. So I do have a couple of friends and like my partner, but other than that, I kind of really rely on the internet to feed my geekeries and then my
So,
nerddom.
one of the interesting things that's happened, like, is because I am a fixture in a community that's into this sort of thing, it's basically given me the courage to be more open about my interests in real life. And what's weird about that is people who are, closet geeks will come find me out because, I'm open about the things that I'm into, and it's just a weird concept. Like, so at my workplace, there's a whole bunch of us that probably wouldn't be, correlated like that if they hadn't seen the geeky stuff at my desk, for example. So
Yeah.
it's weird. Like, I think there are a lot of people that feel shame over their hobbies.
And that's so sad because at the same time, it shows you how much longing there is to sort of connect with others that have the same interests. So the kind of longing when they, when they see your stuff, they like instantly become interested in you, and they feel like you could be someone they can connect with because that's who they are. And it's so sad that there should be this isolation for
Yeah.
certain interests. I mean, it's so silly. Well, people are isolated because they have different interests than others. That is completely nonsensical. So, but yeah, that's how the world is. So.
Yeah, and it's always disturbed me that, it's completely normal to go out drinking and watch, the football game at a sports bar, but it's not normal to gather up with a bunch of friends and go take on a boss in a dungeon.
Oh yeah. You can have
I mean, they're
all
both
different
very
sorts of
social
hobbies.
activities,
Yeah.
so.
And there are hobbies that are downright sort of, dangerous or bad for your health even in real life, and they are still considered okay hobbies except for gaming. So,
Yeah.
but I think it's changing too.
Well, I would think it is because, what was a niche for our generation is slowly becoming just what's accepted. Like, okay, you're going to own an Xbox or a PlayStation or a whatever, which is no different than owning a DVD player was a few years ago. It's just a common thing that people have.
Yeah, I think so too. And if you consider countries like Japan, where gaming has always been part of the culture for much longer anyway than here, and how everyone is just playing games, even, all elderly people and everyone, it's just nothing special. So I think we just need more time. I want to make my grandma play video games.
That would be awesome. I totally think that, we will be, 70 something still playing video games.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and hopefully with awesome virtual reality setups.
That's something that I'm not sure if we're ready for yet or not. Like, I see the Rift, whatever, Oculus Rift, and I feel like there's still a technology that's missing. Like, the Oculus Rift is cool and all, but you still have to be grounded in the physical world while you're in virtual reality.
Yeah.
Until they come up with some way of, like, having a holodeck where you're actually fully immersed in, I don't think it'll quite be what we want.
I agree. But I do think that, you know, there's already science going on right now where they actually are testing things that will project virtual reality directly into your eye or even your brain, like where it's not going to be a screen that you stare at, but actually happening inside your head, right?
I am totally ready for the William Gibson, you know, Neuromancer era where I just have a data port in my head. I'll be first in line to sign up for that.
Yeah, me too. Or like in the Matrix with the thingy in the back.
I know Kung Fu.
Oh, God.
I mean, geeks. Like, imagine how that's going to change learning, though. Like, when you have all the world's knowledge at your footprints and can instantly, you know, grok the information.
Amazing. I hope I can be there for that. I hope they don't take too long because I really want to experience that.
Like, I'm okay with not having flying cars, but man, I want that data port in the back of my head.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you know, that's my question now for you, Belle.
Okay.
Who would you be? Which character? Which class? And what kind of ability do you have in a fully immersed virtual reality MMO?
I think I would still be the tank. Like, I have a deep protective instinct. Like, I mean, I want to stand up for my friends. I want to protect them. I want to, you know, keep them from harm and, you know, bolster them whenever I can. So I think I would still play the tank. Like, that's me, I think.
Mm-hmm. So you'd be wearing armor, like, very medieval.
Yeah.
Kind of, okay.
Yeah, I totally wear full. I mean, like, it doesn't even have to be medieval. Like, but I want to be the big armored dude. Like, that's always the character that I've aspired to be, is the guy wearing all the freaking armor. Like, I don't want to be the stealthy person.
And you could have your, you know, you can decide over your looks and everything. You can be anyone and can have pink hair. And
the funny thing is, like, I don't know if you've ever noticed, but, like, if you look at the background in Twitter, it's got a bunch of my characters. And, like, all of my characters tend to have a very similar look. Like, it's like I rarely ever roll a different character that doesn't fall within some certain parameters. And it's kind of like I've created what I've called my idealized version of myself.
Yeah, so, pretty much what I do as well. Like, all my characters kind of look like me, well, most. So I can, I feel you.
But I've always felt like that maybe I am the aberration. Because at least among my friends, they all roll vastly different characters that aren't anything related to them.
Yeah, I've had discussions like that in the blogosphere, asking people, you know, why they choose to play different races with different looks and whether that is more or less immersive. And I think it's not. It's like totally works for others. Just not for me personally, because I'm very much sort of relating to my avatar as myself. I never play a role. Like I said, I kind of feel that I'm pretty much myself online, and I just want my character to be me. And that's why I don't do alts either. And that's why my characters look like me. It's kind of boring. So, but yeah, I'm pretty much like you in that respect.
Like, I will, like, especially when we do role-playing, like pen and paper role-playing, I'm basically me. It's just me with one of my traits amplified. Like, so, you know, maybe this character's way more aggressive than me, but it's still me underneath the covers. Like, but yeah, so I think we're maybe, it'll be interesting because I intend to kind of talk to people about that. And it'll be interesting, like several of these shows down the road, to see how many people play characters like themselves versus play, you know, vastly different characters.
Yeah, and how that approach to the game differs for them, you know, if it's more of a story of someone else and they're just being a witness, so they're witnessing this story, or whether they really feel this is me immersed in the game. I think that's a very different approach.
Okay, so speaking of all of this, I've got a question for you. How do you feel about narrative game experiences where you are playing a very specific character that has nothing to do with you? Are you able to get immersed in them, or do you find them chafing because it's not your character?
I actually love them.
Really?
Yeah, because I grew up with classic RPGs and JRPGs, and they're very much, even more so than Western RPGs, JRPGs are all about just having a linear narrative of a hero with a certain name who meets certain people, and you just get to go along and be a witness, and that's all there is, whether you're Link in Zelda or many of the other JRPG franchises that are very popular, like Chrono Trigger or Final Fantasy. It doesn't get more narrative than that in terms of playing a role-playing game, I think.
Yeah, I
And
guess you're
I
right.
really like them.
Like, I
I
have
always
always
played
loved
them.
those, but I, for whatever reason, like, there's a certain kind of game that I've struggled to get into where, I'm playing a character that would be very similar to me, but it's not me, and it's not saying the things I would want it to say.
I mean, that can be an issue. I think that's why Chrono Trigger is one of the games with the mute protagonist that was very popular because he never speaks. But for me, this is different. MMO or RPG are different for me. I can totally go on a journey with Link and have fun there and also sort of meet awesome characters that I care about, but it's not my story. And in
Yeah.
MMOs, I feel it should be my story more so than in offline games.
And I think that may be the disconnect there, because, like, I'd never had trouble, with this is Link's story, this is, a Zelda game. But the ones that do allow me to customize my character, but then give me a personality that I'm stuck with. Like, so if it allows me to create a character that looks like I want it to create, but then it's not really my character, that's kind of when I have a disconnect.
That's true, and it doesn't really make sense. That's also why, funny enough, lots of RPGs would let you choose your name, right? Yeah, you could see the name Link. That's like the default game name, but then you could change it, and I never did. I would always roll with the name of the protagonist. I would never put in a different name or my own name ever because I never felt that it makes sense.
Yeah, like, I'll do it sometimes just to make it clear that, like, because we were doing the four job fiesta, where you replay Final Fantasy V, so I named Bart's Bell just because when I took a screenshot, it would show and it would be clearly identifiable as my game. But especially in Final Fantasy, like, when they gave me the option to rename a character, I never renamed it. Like, it felt weird to rename it because that was that character.
Exactly.
Well, we have gone on like an hour and a half now,
Yeah, it's been a while.
and probably should wrap things up, but I am super appreciative of you being willing to be the guinea pig here and be the first of what I hope is a series of semi-monthly podcasts.
I do very much look forward to those because I'm sure you'll have a lot of great people on from the blogosphere that I know as well, and it's always fun to get to know them a bit better. So, and this was very enjoyable, actually. It was great talking to you, Belle.
Yeah, it was fun. And hopefully it is not nearly as nervous as, you went into this thinking.
No, it was no, it was fine, really. I
I did not
totally
make
get
you
what.
bare your soul.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, this is a new thing, right? And you didn't really
Yeah.
know what was going to happen, so I was just a bit excited, I guess.
Well, let's wrap things up and for the folks that don't know you and are listening to this podcast, give me a rundown of where they can find you and what some of your stuff is.
Right. So my blog is mmogypsy.com. That's where I write about MMOs most of the time. Then I'm also part of the trio of BattleBards hosts over at battlebards.libsyn.com. And we talk about MMO music every 2 weeks, so twice a month. If you're into that, you can tune in sometime. And I'm also on Twitter under gypsy underscore sil.
And it was awesome having you, and I am glad that I picked you as the first one, because it seems like we never can actually get to sit down and talk.
Yeah. So at least now, within the podcast, we were finally able to.
We scheduled it.
Yeah, that was great. Thanks
for anyway, having me. Anyway, yeah, hopefully all you guys out there listening had a fun time, and watch this space for the next episode. See you guys later.
Bye.